Henrik Palmgren, and I'm coming to you live from the west coast of Sweden. And I want to thank you for tuning into bbsradio.com. Now, everybody listening today are in for a real treat because we have Michael Sarion joining us for the full hour, and I can't wait to dive right into this interview and some of the topics that we'll be discussing today. I know that time is short and there's lots to talk about, and I just want to mention a few things about Michael first up here. So I can say that he was born in Ireland, and he's an expert on the occult histories of Ireland and America. He has made the deepest researches into the comparative mythologies of the world and into his own country's ancient and mysterious Celtic tradition. His presentations on Atlantis, Lemuria, and the Pre-Diluvian Epoch have been acclaimed by veterans in the field of paranormal research. Michael is the author of Atlantis, Alien Visitation, and Genetic Manipulation, and his new upcoming book is called The Irish Origins of Civilization, which we will be discussing today here. Michael also has a DVD series called Origins and Oracles that will be released April the 27th. That's just about 2 weeks from now. So I also want to mention before we go ahead here that if there's anyone out there who has never heard of Michael Sarion before, I urge you to take a look at the free web streams that Michael's got on his website, which is taroscopes.com. That's www.taroscopes.com, taroscopes.com. And if you watch his presentations, it will give you a very nice overview of the many interesting topics that Michael brings up, and it will also show how incredibly knowledgeable and encompassing Michael is in his research. And the first time I watched these lectures, it completely blew my mind, and they're simply jam-packed with interesting information. So if you haven't heard of Michael Sarion before, head on over to his site, start watching, and start reading. Okay, so that's enough from me, I think, for the moment. So I want to welcome you to the program, Michael.
Thank you, Henrik. It's marvelous to be on your show, finally. You know, I think your work is fantastic, and it's great that we have a chance to talk together.
Well, brilliant. Thank you so much. I'm very glad to have you here because you've been like a, you know, a personal hero of me of mine since I came across your research. I think I first heard you on Coast to Coast or Jeff Renz. I can't remember, but ever since I came across it, something just clicked. So I'm honored to have you here, Michael.
Well, thank you, and thank you for that introduction. There's been actually a lot of attention from Sweden. Even more so than the other Scandinavian countries. If you put it like Finland and Sweden and Norway and even Germany, then Sweden comes first with the interest that I've got. Then there's a lot of, it's equal between Finland and Norway. And then maybe Germany is last on the list. So Sweden is, you know, has shown the greatest of interest, which is, you know, a good sign that it's an educated country and that it's open-minded and that it has a very great interest in what is happening in the world outside of its own borders, you know. So I'm getting a lot of attention from Sweden.
Well, great. That's great to hear because I guess sometimes, you know, you get a little bit blind when you do this kind of thing alone, I guess, and you reach out to the people that you can reach, so to speak, and it goes through the web. So it's very difficult to, you know, get the feel of how the climate outside here is, really. So that's very encouraging to hear.
It is, and it takes time. You see, the consensus trance is not, you know, just a phenomenon of Sweden or Ireland or America. The consensus trance is worldwide, even in the East, because we have had that, you know, the Masonic double-headed eagle says it all. It's the theology, the theocracy, false religion, and then the autocracy, the control of the state, keeping people down, not just for a few years, but, you know, many thousands of millennia. Many hundreds of centuries have gone by. So now we have new tools. Now a certain amount of libraries and books have been available to our people, maybe only one generation. If you think back, many of your listeners, their own fathers were illiterates working on the fields. It's only been one or two generations in the life of Europeans that we've even had access to the information which has been kept for us for centuries, and that you had to be in the past more than 100 years ago, you would have had to be one of the literati. You would have had to be one of the academica. You would have had to be one of the priesthood, you know, to even get a chance, even the faintest chance of having access to the knowledge that now, by just getting online or listening to shows or, you know, going down to do some proper research, we can get our hands on. You know, my mind always goes back to that movie that was made with Sean Connery, The Name of the Rose. And the one good thing about that movie, it has some very good parts, that film, but one of the main aspects of that movie that it shows you is that how restricted the knowledge was, even in the Christian idiom, even in the Christian tradition, the knowledge of what was really happening was limited. What do you think it must be when we go beyond that into the real control of the world? It is limited, and it is only now in the most recent times that we're getting this knowledge. So there's no reason to lose heart. There's no reason to be pessimistic. We are actually doing quite well, given the small years, the short period of time that we've even had access to the, you know, libraries and the information and the internet. So, you know, I always look to that as being something quite positive, actually.
Yes, I certainly agree. It's fantastic, really, when you think about it, because I don't think everybody fully have realized both the potential and the consequence of what the internet really is, and that in itself is a fascinating subject to discuss, how it has been almost unleashed upon us, so to speak.
Let me give you just one example of what you're saying, because I actually agree with that 100%, and I constantly am saying that to people. Because again, what's the pattern? You get something new, like a new skateboard or the new, you know, the latest digital camera, and before you know it, everyone is taking it for granted. So very quickly, people take things for granted without realizing the preciousness of it. And I'll give you just one example. In the past, because on my blog and in other areas of my life, I, you know, deal a lot with people who are, you know, trying to ask me questions about the religions that they follow, and I am not a religious person. I don't believe in Orthodox religion, so I come up with a lot of, you know, resistance about that. And then one of the points that I make is, you see, that these false religions are being exposed more and more and more because of the presence of the internet. Because in yesterday's world, these people, they're a great money power. The Brahmins and the Hindus and all of these gurus, they have a lot of wealth. And in the past, they were able to control the newspapers and the way that knowledge came out before. With the internet, that entire dynamic has changed. Because if, in fact, somebody is abused, which, of course, has happened many thousands of times, by these people, these gurus or these churches, they now can use the internet to publicize that fact themselves with no restriction. They don't have to go through an editor. They don't have to go through some, you know, controlled newspaper source, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the internet has now provided the space for people to let their own personal experiences about something that needs to be known, something terrible, some terrible crimes that have happened. I'm not going to mention any names on the radio, but we all know the stories of the abuses that have happened all over the world. Those abuses have been happening for a long, long time, but it's only now that we have the internet that perhaps a person can put up their own web page, or they can get together with others who've been likewise abused, and so the story goes on. So this is so, so important, and it happens in many other ways in regards to the internet. So we cannot, you know, underestimate that particular source.
Absolutely, and this I know, since one of your web streams, of course, is entitled is it The Origins of Evil? Is that correct, Michael? Yeah,
that's correct.
And that subject in itself, of course, is closely related to what you have been discussing, both in your Atlantis book and what, from what I understand, your upcoming book, Iris: Origin of Civilization.
Yes, that's correct. Now, you see, you've stated it very correctly, because if you just tell people that, okay, this guy has written a book about Atlantis, or he's written a book about the Celts, or he's writing a book about the Irish, again, the whole, you know, the normal mind will just categorize that and say, all right, yeah, this guy's a historian, very interesting, put him in the category with everybody else that's interested in all of this ancient history. I have to keep on stating what you've just said, which is that, yes, I am interested, like everybody, in where we've come from and the ancient history, but I am much more interested in the way we are living now. So I refuse to be categorized as just this, you know, sort of academic person, or, you know, this researcher stroke historian who's just going to sort of, you know, keep his focus on the ancient times, which has no meaning. It, my interest in the ancient times came through studying the work of Jordan Maxwell, who is another great scholar who was always saying that if you want to understand the days you're living in now, you have to understand where you've come from and what's been going on. This was something that rang very true to me and got me interested in history, where I wasn't that interested in it before because, you know, obviously in school it's a very boring subject.
Yes.
You know, so my interest is about why are we in the state that we are in now, and I have these overarching meta themes that I deal with. My books are about history and about the subjects that you mentioned, but they come under the umbrella of some mighty meta themes, which is the origins of evil, which is connected to why the human race is so cruel, so sadistic, so unjust, why we cannot seem to get this out of our system. And even though we have had so many religions, so many gurus, so many priests, so many gimmick merchants, so much New Age stuff, and all of these other, you know, remedies, and I'm not including the great psychologists in this, but all the other so-called remedies, and nothing has happened. If not, it's actually got worse. We have worse tyrants on the thrones than we've ever had at any time, and the world is sinking into a complete mess, worse than it has done at any time. So then, what is this? And my books and my work addresses this question of what is this particular, you know, phenomenon on the human psyche that is in the world, and if it continues to be in the world, then what is the fate? What will be man's destiny, his future, should he not come to the full understanding of what the origins of evil really are? So my work is just a small part, a small aspect of looking at this bigger question of evil, which many people, many psychologists and anthropologists have looked into. But I feel that my work, my reading of the subject, you know, Henrik, is a lot different than other people and is much more controversial than a lot of the other theories that are given for the origins of evil. And I want people to get familiar with it, not to just accept it, not just to go, yeah, he's got the answers, let me accept this. I want them to know thoroughly. I want them to observe the nature of evil that is in our world. I want them to become like detectives on it.
Yes.
And then, you know, and then try to say which of the 10 theories out there, you know, which one fits this subject best.
Absolutely. And that's so important because this is, according to my own opinion, of course, but this is so much about being aware and about being, aware of all the stuff that is going on around us, because it seems like we have for so long now been having our heads in the ground and just avoiding this because it's difficult subjects or whatever. And just as you say, if we are to rise to our full potential and do what we're supposed to do on this planet, we got to deal with these issues first, and that's why I consider your work to be so incredibly important.
And this is an old tradition. As a matter of fact, even though it's not done now, in the old shamanic tradition, it was forbidden for anyone to move forward to try and say, I'm looking for enlightenment, I'm going to save the world, I'm going to do all this stuff, before the person dealt with their own inner house. As dust gathers on the table, as fruit will rot, as rust will come on your car, it is a natural process of the world, of the universal order, to have corrosion, have entropy. Like Freud is talking about the Thanatos instinct, which is also, you know, a twin of the Eros. In the spiritual community, only Eros is of concern. They have not bothered to deal or integrate the Thanatos aspect, which is the aspect that talks about also deconstruction, of letting go, of having less, of not being so damn acquisitive. This is also a Taoist understanding that has long since been thrown aside, especially in America. And the whole idea is that spirituality involves some sort of getting, some sort of increase, some sort of acquisitive drive. And this is tremendous materialism carried over into the spiritual, which has nothing to do with any of this. Now, on a psychological level, this becomes very, very dangerous, because the acquisitive mind that wants God, just like a rich man wants a Mercedes, then starts to be acquisitive. And this is a very pollutive way, a very violent self-to-the-self way. And this violence then becomes manifest outside. In the true shamanic system, it is about looking at who you are and facing the dark side, the Thanatos concept, and trying to process and integrate those aspects, which constitutes the true spirituality. Now, the world has not done this for many, many millennia, for many generations now, and therefore we're out of balance. And also, following on from what you've just said, my work tries to emphasize this simple fact, that the human being, if he was left to his own organic, natural nature, would very quickly be involved with truth and with morality, with virtue, and with enlightenment, very quickly. If we find that the human race is having lots of difficulty in that area, it is not because there's something missing in the motive, or that there's not enough passion there or desire. I mean, obviously that is there in all of us.
Yes.
It is something that is an impediment to that. If the hot air balloon is not rising into the sky, chances are you still haven't, you know, taken out the ballast, or the thing is chained to the ground. So
exactly.
My sole agenda or action is to help people to see, look, don't expect this balloon to fly if that chain is still, you know, locked to the earth. Find out what it is that is holding you back from your natural evolution. Remove that problem, and then automatically, without any effort, your evolution will take place. However, it's very difficult to now talk to this kind of materialistic, acquisitive mind about that kind of thing, because they've been trained out of this idea to see a thing as it really is and to look at the dark side. They don't want to look at the dark side because the ego has many defenses, because the ego knows that it will lose its autonomy. The ego knows that it is painful, just like to put your fingers into a wound. It's kind of uncomfortable. So the ego then sets up many, 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 many psychic defenses. And the defenses are also then manifested in the collective level, where you have the collective defenses. The collective doesn't want to look at its negative, you know, so-called darker social side. But my whole point is that the contamination exists within the human psyche first. So until people take care of their own, you know, the old story, until they take care of their own house, you can forget about having any positive change, and Bono can shake as many hands as he likes around the world, all the dignitaries, and, you know, blinking Mandela can have many speeches, and we can get out there with our brooms and try to fix society, and you can have all sorts of political action and placards and green pieces and all this other nonsense, and not a single thing will get done, because man is toxic, and everything he touches is toxic. You can't clean a beautiful clean window with an oily rag and then say, I have a wonderful view of my garden. How come the window got so dirty? You are the one creating it.
Exactly. And of course, on top of this concept that you've just described here, we have external manipulation that makes this process to thrive within us. We have, of course, the religions that in itself, I believe you will go into this, I believe, in some detail in your new upcoming book about the origins of Judaism and some issues about Jesus Christ. And will you go further into this? Or I see here you have the rise of Christianity and will you go further into both Islam and go into Buddhism, or do you stay within these the three main Western religions here? So
yes, I try to stay within those, because remember, my context on that book is Ireland and also Egypt, so it needs to be worked constantly to show how the Vatican and how the Christian religion. First of all, what are its origins? That's what I go into, that it was born out of Druidism, ancient Druidism, and then basically came back to murder its own roots. Because if the Druidic Celtic tradition in its purest form was maintained, then there is no way that the monstrous Leviathan that we have now preying over us would have existed. So the Roman legions, these bloodthirsty Romans, were sent out into the world to destroy all forms of Druidism, which most of our people's idea about Druidism today is completely nonsensical. You have in Sweden, off of the coast of Stockholm, all the archipelagos where the great Gothic, you know, peoples of old erected their nature temples and lived in great harmony with the world, with the land, with the water, with the sea. All of these original Gothic, Teutonic peoples and Celtic peoples had the highest religion, and they worshipped the sun. And they also transported their religion all throughout the eastern lands. So my work is to show that there are many false understandings to know is to never question religion. What you're told about religion, you just accept. And we're also then, but one of the other important taboo areas that we need to start to understand and break through, and it will help people a lot, once they finally understand this meta theme, then their understanding of the world is going to become a lot much easier to understand. And that is that we are told from official sources that civilization, whatever that is, civilization, it spread from the east to the west.
Yes.
And we accept this wholesale, and even though it does answer a few important questions about who we are, it leaves thousands of other questions unanswered. What we have to get our heads around, and I'm really sad that this has taken so long, is that civilization, in fact, spread from the west to the east, as all the great teachers like C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien and many others knew this. But this knowledge has been suppressed. My first book, Atlantis, dealt with what was in history before history, prehistory. And we know that Atlantis and Lemuria and these continents were in the west. Atlantis certainly was in the area where we now know as the Atlantic Ocean. After Atlantis fell, the survivors, the high magi of these lands, fallen lands, one of the countries that they colonized was Ireland, England. These are the Fortunate Islands or the Blessed Islands. You can actually include Sweden and Norway in this if you so desire, because those lands survived. So it's very important for the Scandinavian people to understand their true legacy, although I know that many in that country, they do understand it. So the whole mythological cycles of these lands are a remnant of the survival of the fallen lands of old, which is what the Skalds were composing, and what is in the Edda, and what is in the ancient books of Ireland, the Annals of Ireland. Now, it is from these high Druidic colleges in England and Ireland and Britain that the knowledge was then taken westward. Now, along comes the modern historians. They know this, but they have many reasons why they want to cover this up, which we don't have time to go into. But people can go on my website and read on the astrotheology pages. The whole story is there. Then That's they come fair. And they say, all right, how are we going to hide the fact that 5,000, 3,000 years B.C., this worldwide Druidic college was in existence? That even Pythagoras, about 500 B.C., and Socrates, and Thales, and the Greeks, and the Hellenes, and the Germanic people, all were educated by. That's where you went in those days.
Yes.
How are we going to hide the fact that this existed? Well, we burn it all down. That's easy. That's the easy part. But how do we erase it from people's minds? That's the hard part. So gradually, as these world conspiratorial organizations, the Knights Templars and the Masons and all the rest of it, as they start to gain suzerainty and power in the world, they start to fund these historians to put the focus on much later migrations from the east to the west. So it's not that I'm saying that no migrations took place. I'm just saying, yeah, they did. But the migrations from the eastern lands to the west that happened in, 6th century B.C., 5th century B.C., and then up until we're talking 1066 A.D. with the movement again of the Judaic people into England under William the Conqueror. My God, that is so late in the day, and they're trying to tell us that this is the beginning of the great rise of Christianity and the worship of the sun and the coming of the solar church. What kind of nonsense? It's the same nonsense they tell us that once upon a time history began only 7,000 years ago.
Yes.
Thankfully, that nonsense has been shot down, right, by Graham Hancock and Michael Cremo, and thousands of other scientists have shown that's nonsense. Well, then let me also add, it is also nonsense to say that only 500 years B.C. coming to England is the solar church of the Jews and the Judaic people, to say now it is created. And these tree-worshipping, goddess-worshipping Druids, Celts, and Teutons are idiots, all pagans. Now we will civilize them.
Exactly.
The audacity, the criminality of these liars, these deceivers, when for thousands upon thousands and thousands of years, the greatest churches and the greatest scholars, the greatest mystics and astronomers and mathematicians who worshipped Bel and who worshipped the goddess, who already had inspired Egypt to rise thousands of years before, we have been sold such a tissue of lies. But then came a man, Hendrik, in the turn of the century. As it always happens, truth can never be shot to the ground. So in the turn of the century came a most unusual man from America, but he was Irish, called Conor McDarry. And Conor McDarry, along with Gerald Massey and Anna Wilkes and many of the people that I mentioned on my website, were the first people to say, hang on, this doesn't make a lot of sense. What happens if we reverse the mirror and say that the migrations of civilization took place from west to east, what would this mean? Because in America, in South America, and the Maya, the Aztec, they're saying absolutely clearly that civilization came from the west.
Exactly.
So then how come in the east they're saying it came from the east? It's completely nonsensical. So now we have to do this thing in the world. And, you know, I'm one of the first people to even take on this task, this to reverse this. And I believe that many questions, so many more, you know, anomalies and idioms are now explained. But, of course, as you hinted earlier, to do that is to come up against the world order that has said that the opposite, that civilization has spread from the east, and that's all you need to know. And
yeah.
Here's the Bible, and you just read that, and you believe it, even though it doesn't make a bit of sense. You just accept it, and this is all you need. Well, has that kind of philosophy, that kind of ideology, has led the world into the mess that it is in. So we need to address this issue so that people come back to find out what kind of lies have been played on them.
Yes. And this, we can just take this. I've been myself discovering a few of the pieces here, I think, because there are obvious reasons right now between, say, Israel and Ireland. You have certain points that connect. And one, of course, the first one I can think of right now is the old story, if you believe it, so to say, but that the prophet Jeremiah, among other things, migrated from Israel to Ireland and brought with him, I think it was the Stone of Destiny, or which now is the Coronation Stone.
The Stone of Fall, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And the question then becomes, is this a myth that you would consider we can reverse, or do you have any thoughts on this?
Sure. The Stone of Bethel, or the Stone of Fall is just the Celtic word for stone. So Stone of Fall simply means stone of stones. And it was an old symbol that goes back, even the Brahmins had the phallic Shiva stone, so many thousands of years before the Jews ever came on the planet. So the idea of worshipping the stone as a central image of God, or to be coronated in front of the great stone, this was an old, old Druidic philosophy that got taken by the Druids. It's one of the remnants. It's one of the ancient relics that I was talking about. When the Druidic colleges were all over the world, and I mean all over the world, they went to China, they went to Japan, and they were in India. And it's from those times of those Aryan migrations. And when I say Aryan, I do not mean the term Aryan as has been used in the last 100 years. Aryan comes from the word Irish, because the Irish are not with a capital I. The I is not true. The Irish were actually the Irish, A-R-I. Originally, the original Aryans, meaning worshippers of the light, worshippers of the sun, and the pure and the noble ones. So when the Indians in India talk about the coming of the Arya, they're talking about the Druidic colleges that were set up in those countries. Now, this one of the idioms was the worshipping of the stone. The actual Stone of Bethel, you can actually go and see it. It's still there. It's never moved. It's in the front of Newgrange Tumulus in Ireland, the oldest shrine or oldest burial mound or citadel or temple or whatever you want to call it, is in County Meath, and it's called Newgrange. It's visited by so many tourists every year, and there it is. It even predates the pyramids, which is, again, one of the reasons why I find these other, you know, historical explanations so ludicrous, because these buildings in Ireland actually predate even the pyramids. I mean, it should be obvious what that means. So, but in front of this great, and you can get online and look at it. I have pictures of it on my website. There is a ginormous stone that has the three famous spirals on it, and it has a lot of the other astrological symbols. And that is in front of the door of Newgrange Tumulus. That stone is the original Stone of Bethel. Don't they say that the shamrock and the harp, you see all these so-called Irish symbols, they're meant to have come with the Judeans from east to west? It's all nonsense. These things existed thousands of years before the island was colonized by any of these people. So, you know, we can't go into every single anecdote, but you're absolutely right. These symbols, the red hand of Ulster, the six-pointed star that the Jews are using today.
That is fascinating.
Yeah, the Brahmins have used it before. All of this was originally transported from the Solar Stellar Church of the Irish, and then get inseminated into all of these other religions. And then we find it coming back. But the key term is that it's coming back to the homeland. It's not being brought for the first time.
Of course.
Yeah.
We can just look at... I noticed one thing also that I think connects with the Ulster symbolism there, because it's the Orange Order. I think, isn't it the Protestant movement in Ireland? But right from the William of Orange, the Orange Order.
That's right.
And we, of course, had, I don't know if there's a connection, but it's quite obvious, I think, the Orange Revolution, which recently swayed through Europe and, of course, even went through Israel in Ukraine. And do you have picked up on any thread here? Or?
Yeah, I think that was very dubious. When I saw, especially in Russia, it could be a coincidence. I don't know. I don't know much too much about it. But I am very, very, I've always known that so-called revolutionary movements are often just a device that's created by these Orange Orders and the Hanoverans and these Habsburgs and their descendants, the Windsors, and all their henchmen, in order to, what you might call, siphon off revolutionary, true revolutionary spirit that might, you know, be building up. Because remember, they know that every generation or so, there's going to be a lot of dissatisfaction, especially amongst the youth. And if they don't do something about it, like give them too much, you know, they need to give them drugs, rock and roll and sex and all sorts of fashions in order to keep them all from, you know, really saying, wait a minute, what's going on here, and getting in touch with the true picture. You know, I don't have too many hippies coming to my talks. And there's a reason. Because these people who think that they're doing good by running out in the streets and wearing their green army jackets and parading in front of the great stately homes and saying, you know, down with wealth. You know, it's not really happening because these ignoramuses don't understand how the game works and that they're even funded by the side that they claim to be hating. You know, there's that fantastic movie you must have seen from Germany, The Educators.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I strongly recommend that everyone get hold of that movie, The Educators, because it is a very important movie that goes into this this zest that the youth have. There's nothing wrong with a zest. The idea of getting into changing the system as it is, that is very necessary. And I'm glad that that spirit comes about in people to say something is so deeply wrong with the world of our parents and the complicity and the duplicity of our parents. Well, what do we do about it? Well, this movie Educators deals with that, you know, it's not so easy. It's not so easy because the people that you're fighting might actually be giving you the weapons. It might not be a fair fight. So there's a certain kind of dialectic at play here where there is an entire funded semi coterie that works to take disgruntled teens and disgruntled people from the universities, just like it has done in America, to get them to have revolution, so-called, with a small r, you know, and then the real revolution doesn't take place because you're just moving the furniture around on the Titanic can in fact make you feel good that you're doing something wonderful, you know. This is what unfortunately stands in the way of some real action here.
Of course, we have... You got to quiet the popular uprising, or
even
supply the solution to the problem before anyone can do something real about it. So it's a brilliant scheme. I mean, what do we have any chance here?
Every shop you go to has some faux something or other, faux China, faux painting. We accept it normally in the retail world. You can go and buy a facsimile of the Mona Lisa, but you certainly can't buy the original. You can buy, you know, a facsimile of Waterford crystal or Ming China and laughingly take it home and go, well, of course it's not the real thing. Well, wait a minute, isn't the same thing in politics? You can buy a beautiful idea like revolution. It doesn't mean it's the real thing.
Exactly.
They just sell it to you at a discounted price and you run with it. You run down to the local store, you know, you bring it back and you install it in your head, just like a machine, and you go, now I'm a revolutionary.
Yeah, exactly.
To be a revolutionary? Oh, the real thing? Oh, you got to die for that. You got to really have the power. You got to be a crazy horse.
Yeah.
You got to be a Che.
Yeah.
Yeah, different caliber.
It's fascinating, and we're at the bottom of the hour here,
yeah.
So we can mention that. Is your book available now, Michael?
No, the Atlantis book is available.
The Atlantis book, of course.
Yeah, people can go to the website and check it out. And I'm hoping that the first edition of the Irish. Also, trying to every time I put out a book, I am feeling in the back of my mind to also do it as a DVD because, of course, we have another problem in our world, Hendrik, as you well know, which is that people just don't bother reading.
Yes.
They don't have the time. And it's become quite obvious. So instead of fighting that and getting and complaining about it, people still do watch. And it's easier for them to learn through that medium as well, especially the younger generation, because I'm never losing sight of the younger generation, who I have a lot of hope is going to be the one that, if they're steered correctly, we can have a lot of change. So, you know, I'm not sure whether the DVD or the book is actually going to come out first. Right now it looks like it's the book, and that's fine.
Okay.
With the DVD to follow.
Yeah. And this, tell us about this this DVD series, because it's a huge... how many DVDs is there here?
There's 9 in all, and 10 if you include the Irish Origins one, if I work on that. But right now what we've done is we've released 6. Only 6 were complete enough in the series. The series is called Origins and Oracles, and it's like a sort of a Joseph Campbell... I'm very inspired by Joseph Campbell and his work. So, you know, so budget-wise, style-wise, content-wise, he was always my sort of model in a way.
Yeah.
And I think that his message also went down very well to the world. All the world is familiar with his type of shows. So that was what was on my mind. And I presented it in that kind of way. But, you know, dealing with the more controversial subjects that we're familiar with. And therefore, 6 are released, and they're going to be released to the public on the 27th of this year, 27th of April.
Yes,
is the launch date. We have a lot of people all through the world interested in this. They've been anticipating this.
Yeah.
You know, it's the old story. It's taken a long time because I do not have any middleman in the way, and I don't. I try to produce and direct and everything myself, so that there's no toning down of the information, because I'm sick and tired of living in a world in which when you have the truth, because many people have had the truth, hundreds of people even have spoken about what I'm talking about. Nothing is new. It's just that when you then go to try and interface with the world, the market, they're telling you, this has to go, this has to be cut, let's cut this down for time, we're going to cut this part for content.
Yes.
You know, well, look, I'm from Ireland, and that kind of jive does not work on me. You're not going to cut anything that I've done, and I will wait for the time where I can produce it myself, and people can just come to me to get it. So this is why it took a little bit longer.
Yes.
To produce, you know, because I've been into this work for many, many years, but it's taken the digital age, again, you know, to get to the point where you can produce something that isn't edited for time or for content, so that people have the beginning, the middle, and the end of the story, so that when they're done watching or done reading, their questions are answered. They don't have 30 new questions like it is when you watch television, some of these one-hour or half-an-hour programs on the mysteries, quote-unquote, or the unexplained mysteries. Hell yeah, they're unexplained even after the hour's over of that show. I thought the program was called Unexplained, you know, to explain the mysteries. They're leaving you with 20 other questions.
Precisely.
Nothing moves forward. So I'm hoping that I'm one of the first generation to say, you know, let's take the digital medium, explain the whole damn thing in beginning, middle, and end, and let's get rid of the questions. Let's start having some answers now. We're in the age of solution think.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, and this... of course, many things, as many of us know now, are in one way or another, it seems to be in a way hinged on this 2012 date, of course. And this is one of the, I know, one of the DVDs that you will be discussing, this date. Do you care to talk a little bit about
that? Sure. See, to me, again, let me just say that also it's important to realize that physical dates, you know, like changes on the clocks, is not really what this thing is all about. That's another way that the mind can have a cop-out, that just by saying, okay, 2012, or no, wait, it's 2013, no, wait, it's 2007. You know, this kind of stuff is, like, meaningless. We're not talking about the shadow on the time dial when we're talking about 2012. We're talking about a phase shift spiritually, psychically, and mentally. And this is, again, confusing because people have been brought up on the, you know, the Maya end date in a bit of a different way. My reading of it is that we are already... In fact, from 1999, we have been in a countdown of 13 years. The Maya said that from 1999 to 2012, there would be the last of the 13-year, you know, countdowns of their calendar. And after that, they said that everything would change.
Yeah.
Now, my reading of it is that it's not just the Maya talking about this. This is also connected to the end of the age of Pisces. So if we want to talk more in Western astrological jargon, and that's all it is, because, again, we have to use words. We have to understand that there are 12 signs of the zodiac, and that we are now, for people who don't know about this, they can, you know, check out my website and all of that, but safe to say we are in the end of the last sign of the zodiac. The last sign of the zodiac is Pisces. The sign that closes the year is Sagittarius, but the sign that closes the zodiac is Pisces. And we are in what is called the age of Pisces. Now, it takes a long time to explain what all of that means, but basically we are in the closing cycle. A very, very major cycle is closing. If people are not familiar with this, they just need to visualize a watch. Open one of those nice Swiss, you know, watches, and you'll see the big cogs and the small cogs. Well, time is like that. And in time, there are these large cycles, and then there are all the mini cycles that spin under those. This cycle that we're talking about, the zodiac cycle, is one of the big cogs. And on that cog, it's coming to its final, you know, phase before it needs to be wound up again. Now, in the end of any phase, or in the end of any age, there is a time of cleansing. Now, we've been under that time of cleansing for, you know, a couple of generations, actually.
Yeah.
Aleister Crowley talked about it coming at the turn of the century. Even Nietzsche made some references to it. But specifically speaking, in 1999, it really heated up. So that from 1999 until 2012, we are in a major cleansing cycle. Now, again, people who are running around without a lot of psychological knowledge are, you know, not fully aware of what that means. So my work and the article, Shiva and the Age of Aquarius, and the DVD that's coming out, is more to explain what this ending cycle really is about, and that it is linked to consciousness. It's not just something, oh, my goodness, look out there, you know, the sky is moving or the sun is doing whatever. Everything external is hinged on our psyche in the way that Jung and Freud were brilliantly to explain, that the microcosm and the macrocosm is linked. Now, we live in a culture where those connections between the psychic energy and the physical energy are completely lost. People could not care less about them. And even within the New Age movement, not enough has been done to explain the beauty of this ancient connection which exists, that nature and man is connected. What this means is that your consciousness, your thinking, your behavior, and your subconscious drives create the fate that that comes to you. And that is the same for an individual, and it is the same for the whole of the planet. So the fate that is happening in the next 10 years is manifested on who we are as people inside subconsciously and consciously.
Yes.
And denial works by saying, oh, no. It's George Bush. It's Margaret Thatcher. It's Tony Blair. It's war in the Gulf. No, it's just chaos. Oh, no, it's economic destruction. You know, this is the child mind running around trying to constantly point fingers to say, no, it's nothing to do with me. It's that big brother, that big shadow, that big demon that's causing my life to be, you know, in the way it is. Well, see, that lie, that particular escape mechanism, is no longer going to be working. In the next 7 years, we're going to find the carpet rolled up on that one. And people are going to have to see in their most intimate lives, Henrik, how their own behavior and their own virtue or lack of it is causing their life to be. It's going to be pointed out to people in such incredible intimate detail that no human could describe it. You need to be Salvador Dali to paint it, because it's going to be meticulous, man. The force has its own beautiful way of pointing out to people how they are the architects of their own lives. So this 2012 is not just some sort of apocalyptic end date. The only thing that is ending is the way that we have been living. And as far as I'm concerned, it's a good thing, because we have been living on the bones of injustice and mass murder and lies and immorality and cruelty and sadism. And, of course, my major concern is the sadism to the self, albeit that is very psychological, that man is the most cruel to his own self. And we need to explore this on the Origins of Evil web stream. You know, we'll talk about it a little bit. But in all my DVDs, it is the undergirding theme. The undergirding theme is, look, folks, we must understand that there are many tribulations in the world. But that's just the bogeyman. Those are projections of human consciousness. And we need to get back to psychic hygiene. You know, there's a reason why the word sanity and the word sanitize are from the same word root. We are unclean in our consciousness, and inwardly we even know that. And anyone who was, hygienic or sane or clean, we kill them, because we don't want those mirrors around. And people, you know, who have suffered also tremendous injustice in this world, more than likely they are the clean ones who've been coming up against the unclean ones and suffering as a result, because you either are a processor of this dark, toxic, negative energy, but even if you're not a generator of it, you're definitely a receiver of it. So, unfortunately, you see, this is one of the predicaments of the world, that the good people are completely stymied because they've been running around trying to assist and help and live with and have relationships with people who are immensely toxic. And I can't stress that enough. And it's not just from this lifetime either. But let's leave the mysticism aside for now. Right?
Can we connect this with the meek shall inherit the earth?
Well, probably. The way to look at it is, that we have been at the end of the age of Pisces, at the end of anything, you see. Oh, okay, let's look at it this way. Imagine that the age of Pisces in which we are in now is like the antechamber or the corridor outside a court, right? Mm-hmm. And all the criminals are waiting for their, you know, to go into court to have their book of judgment read.
Yeah.
Well, that's what the age of Pisces really is, spiritually speaking. All the criminals of the earth and the universe and those who have not only been doing filthy deeds towards one another, but those souls who have long, all the way through the 12 cycles, who have been doing debauchery towards Mother Earth, Mother Nature, and that includes the Nephilim, and that includes the children of the Nephilim, and that includes the Anunnaki and all of them. You see, we got to look beyond. We got to look bigger. We got to look higher. How did these people even come into being? What creates evil to exist? Now, at the end of the age, the tribulation that is talked of in the Bible, and the apocalypse, but it's not a biblical idea. It comes from much before that. It's an old astrological idea that was understood by the Druids and understood by the Egyptians and understood by the Maya, that at the end of the age comes the cleaning, the cleansing time, the spin-dry cycle. And that is what this age of 2012 is in a nutshell. People want to know more about it? They can go on the website there and click onto the High Windows articles. And if they click onto that page, the High Windows articles, there is an article there called Shiva, the Holy Spirit, and the Age of Aquarius.
Yes.
And that will give you a better overview than we can do on the show. And, of course, the DVDs are also going to be full of it. That article is just a kind of a summary of the six-part DVD series where this theme is brought up a lot. Because we have, you know, it's like this is the thread and the rest is the beads. The beads is all out there, and a lot of people have the beads of this problem over here, and no, wait a minute, it's government. No, wait a minute, it's ecology. No, hang on, it's psychology. We all have our little, you know, spin on what's going on, but we need to put the thread back on all the beads in order to see the true necklace. The necklace is that we have made it manifested. Just as Carl Jung said, the Greeks said it. The character is fate. You know, Book of Thomas, the ancient Gnostic Gospel of Thomas, said that if you do not bring from within you what is within you, it will destroy you.
Hmm.
You know, so meaning that if we do not bring forth our unconscious selves into the light, then we will be ruined. Or Jacob Bohm, the great alchemist, said, he who dies not before he dies is doomed when he dies.
Hmm.
It's a poetic way of saying that you better know death. Death is not a bad thing. Death is deconstruction. It's of Shiva. You can't have Shakti all the time, you know. You can't have Eros all the time. It comes with it is the other side of the coin. And we have lived in imbalance because we're rejecting that necessary natural aspect. Doesn't the season have its winter and its autumn?
Exactly.
Yeah. So what has happened with the psyche? We are so materialistic in our attitude towards God and reality and truth and enlightenment, and now we're going to, you know, be suffering for it in the future if we don't change our ways.
Yes, and of course that we judge it in that way. It's a strange thing, really, because there's nothing about it that states that it's bad, really. In itself, it is what it is, and we just have to accept it, you know, as we do with everything else around us, even if we judge it as good or as bad. So, absolutely, I agree. It's fascinating. And I can mention here again, before we run out of time, we've got just about 5 minutes left, so
okay.
Time has just flown by here, but people can visit your website, of course. It's taroscopes.com. It's taroscopes.com, taroscopes.com, and for the DVD series, it's originsandoracles.com, just one word, originsandoracles. And heads up, because they will they be available the 27th of April?
Yeah, throughout the world, we're going to have an official release date on April 27th. I have a blog. If you go to Taroscopes, people can, you know, click through to the blog and leave their comments there, because I'm receiving lots of positive comments from all over the world. It's very important to realize all answers in this great game. That might work in the academic world, but see, in the world of the conspiracy and the world of alternative history, it is the coming together of all minds throughout the world with the story that they have and the pieces that they have that really help us to, you know, make the whole question lucid. So my work could not exist without all of the friends and people and confederates throughout the world, from as far away as Australia, even Serbia. I'm getting a lot of emails from, you know, that area, sending me information. you know, coming on to my website to check out things to see what's really going on. It is a collaborative effort, you know. It's not just about one know-it-all person, you know, disseminating truth.
By the way, Michael, I got an email here from a listener who's asking if you know any connections between the Druids and the ancient civilizations from the Balkans, known as, I think it's pronounced Dacians or Dacians, and Illyrians.
Yeah.
Thracians also.
Yeah, the Thracians and the Illyrians, yeah. These are Celtic peoples. The Thracians are definitely connected to the Celtic peoples. This is, I hope to be going into this. I hope that that person will be, you know, I ask him to go onto the astrotheology pages to read about the Irish origins of civilization. You see the Mycenaeans, the Minoans, the Philistines. Remember those Philistines that you keep hearing about in the Bible?
Absolutely.
Yeah, those guys were Celtic. The Phoenicians are Celtic. The Hellenes are Celtic. The Syrians are Celtic. The word Syria comes from the word Seira, S-A-E-R, which had to do with the men of the West.
Huh.
Yeah, the Persians were connected. The Babylonians were connected. The forefathers of most of the tribes and nations of enlightenment that we know today were actually Celtic in stock originally, including the Sarmatians of Russia and many other groups that I can't quite think of right now, but certainly the Achaeans and the most important one is the Pelasgians. The Pelasgians are the ones who are the original forefathers of the Greeks, because the word Greek was never used by Greeks. That's a Roman word. The Romans are the ones who later gave the term Greeks. The Greeks themselves call themselves the Hellenes, and the word Hell is known in Scandinavia, is it not? Hell is the underworld cycle, right? Hell is the god of the underworld, which was the old Celtic Teutonic underworld god, Hell. And the Hellenes are the shining ones, the Druidic ones, who incorporated the underworld cycle in their mythologies and who came from the West. That's how they got the name Hellenes, or the shining, or the bright ones, the ones of wisdom, the ones of knowledge. And the word root, Hell, H-E-L, goes back to Scandinavia and to Ireland. So, you know, and a lot of the groups that are around there. And the most important one of all is the Phoenician race. The Phoenicians, more lies have been told about the Phoenicians than any other group on Earth, basically, especially of the ancient times.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a very interesting subject there.
Of course, they're fascinating. I've been following that trail for some time.
Yeah.
You know, the, what should we call them, the builders. These were the first, merchants, basically, of what I've been picked up on.
Yeah.
It. So. They're fascinating,
isn't it? Very fascinating.
Okay, Michael, we got about 1 minute left. Is there anything you would like to leave us with here?
No, just again, you know, I want to thank you, and you know, I'll be visiting Sweden soon, probably at the end of this year. Definitely have to see my friends over there and friends in Norway and Finland. We'll be definitely paying a visit, so you know, we'll do a live show the next time.
Yeah, that would be great.
or you know, we should do some more shows in between, but definitely we're going to look forward to live shows eventually.
Of course,
you know, right in Sweden.
We will be finishing off over the phone here at the show, so we won't be hanging on together.
Right on.
Okay, so, you know, and I want to thank you, Michael, so much for being on.
Listen, thanks for the invitation, brother, and you know, keep up the great work. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye bye. Talk to you.
Bye.
Hey. Well, there you go, everybody. That was Michael Sarion, and I want to thank him so much for being on. And we are out of time here, flat out of time. So I just want to say that join us next week. We will have Michael Sharp coming on. So tune in and talk to you next Thursday. Bye-bye, everybody.